The devil was once the most beautiful and favored of all the heavenly host, but once infected with the sin of pride, he was cast out of the Lord's sight into the farthest depths of hell. In his humiliation, the devil raged, "'Tis better to rule in hell than serve in heaven. My offspring, the October Pod, will one day conquer mankind and all the Lord's works." And so, reborn once each month at 1:38 a.m., by man's reckoning of time, the October Pod rises from its slumber, seeking what bold individualists it may devour. Edward October presents October Pod, a terrifying spook show. Available now on YouTube, Podbean, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, and at OctoberPodVHS.com. October Pod, retro horror for bold individualists. Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast, truly one of the most unusual ever recorded, contains dribble, slang, and frank discussion of subject matter which under no circumstances should be heard by small children, persons with a heart condition, or anyone who is upset easily. If you are such a person, or if you're the parent of a very small child in the room, we urge you to switch off your streaming device now.
Howdy ho, Jen!
Jesus. Hey, Cam, what are you doing?
I'm in a good mood. It's Tuesday.
Well, good. You know,
what can I say? That's all I can say about that.
Well, good.
What's going on, girl? What you got? What you got? What new? What new?
We got some good news at the OTCP land.
What?
We have a new friendly little helper by the name of Lana McCall.
Woo! Yay!
Lana is going to help us every so often by, or I should say help me, by writing some scripts because, you know, I am totally ADD and I cannot write scripts nearly as fast as you can.
Did you get sidetracked and got to go find Grandpa Gary's uncle's great aunt's sister who used to live in Tombstone and was a Westerner? And look at this, Camille. Look what I found. That's why.
I know. I know. Because I love that. That's my favorite part. So anyway, I get distracted really, really easy. So Lana is going to help us now. And you know, in the past, our good friend Chris Maltby has also written for us. She's been busy lately with her own blog that she's been doing.
Which is awesome. And I suggest you guys check it out. Crime Time Justice.
Yep,
very cool.
We will put the link in the show notes so you can go there and check her stuff out. If any of y'all out there have like a little writing thingamabob that, you know, a little need to write and you think you might want to help us out, send us a script. We'd love to read it on the air for you.
We'll totally give you credit because you know
Total shout out.
You know, honestly, I've given dedicated one of my times that I write is early in the morning before anybody is awake. And I like it. I'm a morning person. I've said it. I travel with the sun. The sun goes down. I got to go to bed. Sun's up. I got to be up. If I sleep till 8:30, I feel like my day is wasted. And I'm not kidding. If you guys ever want to reach out to us and anything like that, of course, we'll give you credit for it. Because you know what?
Of course.
It's hard work. It is hard work to do
that. It is so much hard work. You put in a lot of time and a lot of effort and you get all the credit. It would look good on a resume if you need writing experience. So just throwing it out there. Are you ready to see what Lana has in store for us today?
I am so excited.
All right, here we go. Lana knows me. We're going back in time. You know how I love to go back in time. I love these old cases. We are going back to 1940s in the San Fran Bay Area. I love the San Francisco area, by the way. Remember we went there when we were 16?
San Fran is honestly one of my favorite cities ever. It really is.
I like it too. It's great. It was a lot of fun to go there. Anyway, we're going to be talking about Thomas Henry McGonigal. Thomas was born in May of 1914 to Stephen McGonagall III, how fancy, and Nellie Zimmerman. I know, Nellie Zimmerman. I've always loved the name Nellie. Thomas had 8 brothers and sisters, and two of his sisters were actually twins, and their names, get this, Zelma Emmeline and Thelma Eveline, or Eveline, Emmeline, I don't know. They rhymed. I mean, like, not just one of the names rhymed, both of them rhymed.
How could you even scream at them? Seriously.
I don't know. You can't. My two girls.
Girls, get in here. That's
Zelma and Thelma. Zelma and Thelma. Yeah, no. My girls, Harper and Hadley, when I call them Hardly. Hardly. Yeah. So anyway, Thomas was pretty much in the middle. He was the third youngest. He had a brother and sister that were younger than he was. He also had 2 other siblings that died when they were young. One died at about 3 years old of the croup, which, how horrible. And the other one, it's not really known what he died of, but he was like 11 years old. And you have to remember, in the turn of the century, early 1900s, there were no vaccines, not really. Anyway, people were dying of the Spanish flu in the 1918, so who only knows what they passed.
Anything. You got to think about it. This is pre-antibiotics.
Right.
So you could get, you know, something really simple and die.
The mortality rate in children was very high. But Thomas also had a brother by the name of Gilbert. And when Thomas was 7 years old, Gilbert, who was working in a ice plant called the Sullivan Ice and Coal Company in Illinois, he actually was either an electric wire short-circuited or it was hit by lightning in a storm. But anyway, yeah, he was electrocuted of some sort and he passed away. It's got to be awful. I could not imagine.
That would be such a horrible death. I mean, I guess all ways to die are horrible, but...
Mm-hmm. Lana did find that there was a man by the name of Stephen McGonagall in Croydon, Indiana, in a newspaper from 1897. Not really sure if it is Thomas's father or not, but that is where Thomas's father was born. Anyway, this Stephen McGonagall shot his father 4 times with a revolver. Now,
why?
The dad was 56 years old. The Stephen McGonagall was 19 years old. And this Stephen McGonagall said that he did it to protect his mother from his father. And
abuse?
Probably for abuse. Some form of abuse. But it also states in a small paragraph that the McGonagalls are noted for their physical prowess and fighting dispositions. So just a little interesting side note. We can't technically be sure that it's the right Stephen McGonagall III, but it, since it's from the same town that he was born in, it seems kind of...
I don't think anybody's going to sue us right now because, you know, it's been a while.
It's been a while. I know, but I'm just stating, you know, it's been a while.
I got you.
So anyway, Tom married a woman by the name of Stella, and they divorced in 1943. And then later on, in September 25th, he married a lovely lady by the name of Ina. Ina had 2 daughters, Louisa and Virginia, from a previous marriage. And she was actually one of the first female mail carriers in the city of San Mateo, California. And her father was the first man to drive a motor car in the same city.
Like a car car?
A car, a motor car.
Yeah, like a car car.
One of those.
Not a horse and buggy.
Not a horse and buggy, no. It was an actual car. Pretty cool, huh?
Very.
Ina, you know, she did a lot of things. She was on Founders Day committees. She was
very
a
involved,
historian.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, she was a doer. She wasn't just a housewife. She was very big into social activities in her area in California.
And it seems like that family was kind of go-getters a little bit. Right. So I'm sure that she was, you know, they dabbled in a little bit of a lot.
Exactly. Ina and Tom did not move into a house by themselves. They moved in with Ina's mother, Annie, and Tom did many things. I mean, he was a truck driver. He was an armored car guard and a laborer. I mean, he was just, he did a lot of jobs. I don't know if he couldn't nail one down or if he just decided to do different things.
Many trades. Jack of all trades. There you
right.
go.
But Tom, although he was married to Ina, and by all accounts, Ina was a great woman, Tom didn't seem like he wasn't so great. He had a few problems with the law. 5 previous arrests. 5 arrests, right? While in his teens, he was arrested twice for vagrancy, which, you know, means that he can't support himself. He doesn't have a house. Well, he could, you know, what vagrancy, right?
Yeah.
He was also arrested for assault with intent to rape, and he served 8 years and 3 months.
Oh, well, that's quite the different from the other
vagrancy,
one.
Vagrancy, okay. Yeah. Yeah, he served that in the Illinois State Pen. And after he arrived in California in 1943, he was arrested for fighting a bus driver in San Mateo, and he was placed on 2 years probation. And his fifth arrest is when he attacked a girl in San Bruno, right? Some newspapers say San Mateo. In May 1945, he was booked into the San Mateo County Jail for the alleged assault of a 14-year-old girl from San Bruno. Now, unfortunately, her family didn't want to prosecute because they didn't want the public attention. Because, you know, that was like a dirty thing at the time. You would keep that your daughter was...
Right. Why would you want to bring that up? It's
exactly.
going to give us a bad name. Yeah.
You just take these pills and forget all about it. It'll be fine in the morning. Yeah. Let's just...
Because
if you don't talk about it, it didn't happen, right?
Yes, exactly.
So you would think that him being booked for attacking a 14-year-old girl would somehow make him think twice about acting on his impulses, right? His impulses.
No, because if you're sick, you do that.
Yeah. Well, just so happens on November 2nd, 1945, 2 days after the birth of his own daughter, he decided to kidnap and murder a 14-year-old girl by the name of Thora Afton Chamberlain.
2 days? That is terrible.
Well, if you seem to recall, I had a little...
Let's be honest. It's terrible anytime I say that, like 2 days after. Ugh.
Well, if you remember, when I was 16, it was right when a certain somebody's wife was in labor having a baby. Somebody called me and asked me if I wanted to come over and drink beer. And he was, what, in his 30s, right? I was 16.
Probably late 30s.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I declined, FYI. But anyway.
Thank God.
Wasn't I supposed to be in heat or something? Isn't that what he said later? Anyway.
When you were 18, yes.
Oh, when I was 18, sorry. So here's the story.
Shouldn't be said anytime.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll shut up.
So just 3 weeks short of her 15th birthday, on November 22nd, Thora was your average teenager. She was what is known as a Bobby Soxer. Do you know the term Bobby Soxer?
Yes, I
do. Bobby Soxer.
My mom was a Bobby Soxer.
Yep, my mom too. It's called the Silent Generation, by the way. Bobby Soxer were, when you think of your quintessential 1950s girl with the poodle skirts, you know, the little socks that they used. For the people that don't know, those are Bobby Socks. That's why they got the term Bobby Soxers.
They'd fold them down with the saddle shoes, right? And
right.
A little skirt or the little jeans rolled up, which is so cute.
So cute.
It's cute now.
It is.
It's cute now.
So Thora was your average Bobby Soxer, little teenager. She was described as a sweet little religious girl. And she was always surrounded by friends, and everybody loved her. Big smile, always seemed happy. She went to school at Campbell High School, and on Friday, November 2nd, 1945, just before 3 o'clock, she was walking on the sidewalk with her friends. Just released from class, they were headed to the football field to see the football game, right? She was really excited about the game. All of her friends were going with her. She had... the school colors on, they were red and blue. She had on her red skirt, blue sweater. She had two pairs of Bobby socks on. Two pairs. She had one. What,
did they line them up? Like, did they remember in the 80s we would do the...
Yeah, she had one pair.
That's cute.
One pair red, one pair blue. And so, she, you know.
Aw.
Mm-hmm.
That's cute.
She had her books with a binder. And of course, you can't go and be on the pep squad and cheer on the football team without a cowbell. She had a cowbell with her.
That made me laugh.
I know.
It needs more cowbell.
So for those
Saturday Night Live.
I know. So for those that have asked, yes, we are now doing this with more cowbell. The kids were walking to the football game. They were on the sidewalk. And here comes Thomas. He pulled up in his battered 1932 sedan. Right at the curb, right where the friends were, parked the car right up by the sidewalk, right where they were walking. And he lowered his window. And he motioned for the girls to come up to him. Now, you know, when that happens now, everybody goes in the other direction and screams for their parents for help. Well, this is 1945 around.
Some girls are very adventurous, though, and I think they would totally do that in a group, at least. Not by themselves, but in a group.
Right.
Just because they're nosy or whatever.
Right. But this was in the 1940s. So this is when everybody respected their elders and the okay boomer wasn't going on and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So this is not only was he older, he was like in his 30s, but he was also wearing an officer's uniform, right? It seemed a couple months before, Thomas stole a 4-foot locker from a car of a petty officer. And the contents included a pair of slate gray Navy issue trousers, a Navy type white T-shirt with the blue insignia with the words Londonderry, Ireland on the front, tons of service medals, including the Purple Heart, a garrison hat with the water repellent cover. And Thomas was wearing all of this. And people thought later that he was going to disguise himself. The reason why he stole all this stuff was he wanted to disguise himself, and maybe he had been planning all this all along, right?
I would think so.
Mm-hmm. Because this is 2 months. This was in September 21st. This was early November, so it was in the plan was in the making. He rolled down the windows, and he asked the girls, "Any one of you girls want to earn a little money? I need someone to sit with my sister's children for half an hour this afternoon." Well, all the girls denied it because they were so excited. They wanted to go to this game. They'd been looking forward to it all week. But Thora said kindly, "You know, sure.
I'd like
to earn some money. And if it's only a half hour, I can still get to the game, but I can be a little bit late." And when I read one of these stories, it also said that she denied it, or they all denied it until he offered extra, he'll pay her double. And then she said, sure. So,
was he kind of targeting her at this time or not yet?
Since it was a group, he didn't care. I don't think he cared. And since it was a group,
he just wanted somebody.
Yeah, there's a group of girls, and he was going to try to get one of them. And she said to her friends that just to go along, and she'll be back a little later and just save her seat, right? So her friends watched Thora slide into the car, and she was never seen again. So as the car left the high school, a woman would later come forward and by the name of Ella Bodeau. And she would later recall that this car had almost run her down as she was going out to get her mail. And it was about 3:30 when she went to get her mail. And it wasn't the car that she remembered, that battered 1932 sedan. It wasn't the car, but it was rather what she saw. Uh-oh. And this is kind of almost similar to that viral video that had been going around where the woman was pulled in with a car was screaming. Do you remember that?
I check on that every day, and I can't believe there's not an update yet.
Right. Well, yes. I've got a theory on that. But anyway, in Ella's case, she saw a girl that appeared to be clawing at the back window with a terrified expression on her face.
Oh, my God.
So this was
awful.
It was 1945. So Mrs. Bodeau didn't have a cell phone to call 911. She didn't have time. She couldn't get the license plate. You know, she just remembered it later. Why she didn't call the police after that, I don't know. But you know how it is. Sometimes things look worse. But
and you probably think, those crazy teenagers, right?
Right. Okay, now Ella wasn't the only witness to Tom's presence at the school. Just before Thora was lured into Tom's car, two girls, ages 6 and 8, and their mothers were walking home from the Campbell Grammar School, which was just right across the street from the high school where Thora attended. During the trial, they told how shortly after 2:30, a man dressed in a white T-shirt driving a dark sedan automobile, stopped and asked them if they could take care of a child. So they, of course, refused and moved on. One of the children recalled how he was wearing a service hat with a visor, and that after their conversation with the four of them, he turned around and drove back towards the high school. So, like you said, was he honing in on just Thora? It looks like he was looking for anybody.
Anybody.
Yep. Yeah. He just had an itch that needed to be taken care of, it seemed.
It's kind of like Ed Kemper, right?
Right.
So, like, you use what you have. So, therefore, he was using that authority figure to go after those girls, knowing that they would kind of, he's safe. He's, you know.
Right.
Look at him. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Terrible.
So, what happened after Thora got into Tom's car? We don't really know. Because Tom was a big old dirty liar. Amongst other things, he never really told a straight story when he was caught. Never. But I digress. Let me get back into what's going on here, okay? So when Thora never returned home, her parents immediately alerted the authorities. And unlike your story last week with Jessica, the police started searching immediately. They combed the hills, they looked in the ditches and roadsides, they looked within a 20-mile radius, they looked into vacant buildings, every rental car was checked, could not find her. Not at all. Authorities near Santa Cruz and San Mateo counties gracefully offered their assistance, to which Santa Clara County officials accepted without haste. See, look at this. Everybody was so much nicer in the 40s, right?
I think that probably, too, that was so, I hate to say this, but it was a naive generation,
yeah,
right? Like, they didn't,
well,
they,
and,
I don't know.
And just like Jessica, Thora doesn't seem like the type of girl that would have run away either, you know?
No.
So, when the FBI heard that a possible kidnapping had taken place, in just 2 weeks, one of their top kidnapping experts and the FBI assistant director, 53-year-old Earl J. Conley, came to San Jose. So Earl J. Conley came to San Jose, which is just 8 miles from Campbell, and he came there all the way from Washington, D.C.
New York City!
Well, that's from the FBI. This is right before my daddy started working there. Anyway, people originally thought that maybe Thora was kidnapped and was going to be held for ransom. That was logical, considering, you know, Thora's father was the head of this really large construction company and was described as moderately wealthy. So it's plausible, right? Acting on a hunch from Police Chief Robert E. O'Brien, the police start shifting their focus to Thomas Henry McGonigal. Now, he's an ex-convict from Illinois, remember? They suspect that he had stole naval clothing from a car in Campbell, California. And this, combined with a photograph of him that they circulated between Thora's friends, you know, the friends that Thora was walking with to the football game?
Yes.
They said that the man in the picture was the guy that took Thora. So there you go. That's it. They got their guy, right?
That's not going to be it, though,
right.
I promise.
So Thomas.
Am I right? Right?
Thomas stayed at his job. The police were looking for him. Thomas stayed working at the construction job that he had until about November 8, and that's when he saw his name in the papers for being wanted for the abduction of Thora. Mm-hmm. And he got scared, as he should. He told his wife he was going to take a bus to L.A., and then from there he would hitchhike to Cottage Hills, Illinois, to visit his father. So,
okay, here's where the red flags go up. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, what? You're going to do what? I don't think so.
But why would you take a bus to L.A. to hitchhike? I don't understand. Wouldn't he just hitchhike to Cottage Hills? Or
because I'm thinking that you want to, like, throw people off. Like,
maybe.
You want to get a little farther away, maybe.
Or my second question, doesn't his wife read the paper? I mean, if he saw his name in the paper, would his wife not? Maybe not. I don't know. I would just
different
think.
Time. I mean,
I would just think that somebody around there read the paper that said we're looking for this guy, and they're like, huh, well, I think that's Ina's husband. I'm going to go talk to Ina.
I would not go talk to her because I'd be scared to death he'd be there and take care of me.
Because
you know, wink, wink.
You know there was a Mrs. Gravitz character somewhere in that neighborhood where they lived.
Ooh.
You know it. I'm the Mrs. Gravitz character in my neighborhood. So the FBI traced Thomas as he went Middle West, or this is how they referred to his journey in the newspapers, right? And along the way, Thomas tried to be slick, and he registered under different names and aliases at the hotels he stayed with. He probably registered as Tom McMonagle or McMonagall.
Or John.
Or John.
John.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I wish you had those names. That would crack me
I
up.
Know. It would be great. But, you know, he couldn't outsmart these seasoned agents, right? These FBI people knew their stuff. They were able to follow him his entire journey. Once he got to Quincy, Illinois, he left a bag of luggage at a hotel, and that bag contained a .32 caliber Colt automatic pistol.
Not real smart.
By December 6, he was almost back home. The FBI finally caught him and brought him into custody. But of course, it wasn't easy because I don't know if he tried to commit suicide. I'm assuming so because he took a lot of sleeping pills.
He's not going in without a
right.
sleep. I mean, struggle.
He was semi-conscious when they did bring him in, so they had to bring him into the hospital for observation and treatment. They had a psychiatrist speak with him, all sorts of good. They found out that he was, in fact, healthy, and he was physically healthy and mentally healthy. And so in no uncertain terms, his attempt at trying to plead insane would not go over well.
Good.
Mm-hmm. So 4 days after he was discharged from the hospital, he signed an admission statement freely and voluntarily, which included an itinerary of where he took Thora on November 2nd, 1945. So this is what happened. On December 12th, he signed a statement of where he took Thora. He said he took her from Campbell to Los Gatos. Did I say that right? Los Gatos. Then from Los Gatos, he went to Santa Cruz via State Highway 17. Then from Santa Cruz, north along the coast, via State Highway 1 to a point about 0.3 miles south of the San Mateo County line in Santa Cruz County. And he said that they were both in the front seat of the car. He said he shot Thora with a .32 caliber Colt revolver that he had had in the car. And he also made a statement, if I shot her, this is where it took place. Whatever happened to this girl happened to her at this point. There was but one shot fired. I do not recall replacing the bullet, which was discharged from it on the occasion the gun was fired on highway number 1 at the time the situation happened to the girl. I am satisfied that the girl was dead at the time I proceeded north. While I'm not certain as to just what happened with the gun in the front seat of the car, I know it is my responsibility for what occurred at this time. End of quote.
Let's say I have an affair, mm-hmm. right? And if I did have an affair mm-hmm. and I was in the front seat of a car, and let's say this is how it happened. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
Is my whole point.
Yeah. He said he then went about 10.5 miles north of Half Moon Bay on Cali State Highway 1, which is known as the Devil's Slide in San Mateo County. He then dropped her body over a 300-foot cliff. So the police went out there to search the area, and they searched on top of the cliff. They searched at the bottom where he said that it, the base of the cliff by the ocean. I believe that there was a diver that actually went to find her body and couldn't find her body.
They'd never find that, Matt. There's no way.
Right. But they found a portion of her red skirt and her hair ribbon, as well as some car upholstery that, of course, matched his car. Police also searched where the construction site where Tom worked, and they found some slate gray trousers that were possibly, you know, from a uniform. When Tom was confronted with the trousers, he admitted that they were his and that he wore them on November 2nd, and that when he got home, he washed them to remove the blood stains, and he was scared that he didn't remove all of the blood and worried that there might be some evidence in the seams of or in the pockets of the pants.
Gee, you think?
Mm-hmm. So he decided to bury them.
Totally the thing I'd do.
Along with the trousers that they found on the construction site, they found mm-hmm. Thora's brown shoes, her school books, her papers, her zipper binder, and what? The cowbell.
The cowbell? Mm-hmm. What is wrong with people?
They searched his backyard in San Mateo looking for other clothes that were buried, but they couldn't find anything else. But what's creepy is his fellow employees would later testify that when he returned to work on November 3rd, he was boasting about being out with a 15-year-old girl the night before.
As if that's something to be proud of? Really?
I guess the age thing wasn't that big of a deal in the 40s, but still, that's pretty gross.
It's still creepy.
A 30-year-old out with a 15-year-old, that's not cool at all. It's gross.
It's just creepy.
So, and remember, they found a 32 Colt revolver in the luggage that he abandoned in the hotel in Quincy, Illinois.
In a way, back to that, it's almost more creepy because back then people did get married younger, mm-hmm. right? They'd get married younger. They'd have kids. So, in a way,
but
I mean, it's
still
creepy any time.
It's just...
But you know what I mean? Like,
I know the time was different, but it's disgusting. I don't care. It's gross. So according to Tom, the bullet which killed Thora embedded itself in the wooden frame of the doorpost between the right front and the rear doors of the car, mm-hmm. which to me is just unreal that there's a wooden frame in a car.
Time, Jen. Time.
I know.
Plus they had the metal, the cars were metal, so if they crashed, they were more sturdy. Not plastic, but okay.
Yeah, but it was a wood frame in the car. That's bizarre.
Yeah.
Tom said he dug out the bullet and buried it under the tree in his yard. And sure enough, FBI agent went out there and there it was, right where he said it would be.
I think it's shocking that he would go to those extremes. Mm-hmm.
The FBI also found car padding and upholstery in a drainage ditch near where he worked. He had ripped them out because of the blood stains.
See, that's what I mean. Like, it's not like you just kind of hid stuff or maybe sold your car. I mean, he went to extremes. Mm-hmm.
It was bloodstained, he said, because after the girl was shot and the blood was gushing from her mouth, right? Pretty gross. He voluntarily remained in the custody of the FBI until December 17th, when he was released to the Santa Clara County authorities. This is where he's a total shitbag. He gives so many different versions of this, of what happened. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. So let me just a quick little version of how many things he did. On January 3rd, 1946, he said that he choked. He calls it the girl, but I'm going to replace the girl with Thora. All right. He said that he choked Thora to death at a point on the beach just north of Half Moon Bay and threw her lifeless body over a steep cliff like half a mile away from where her bobby socks were later found. On January 4th, 1946, he wanted to give a more accurate and detailed account of what happened. This time, he said he either stabbed Nora with his hunting knife or choked her at the point 10 miles north of Half Moon Bay, and that he threw the body over the edge of the road in the vicinity of Devil's Slide. Right? Totally different. On January 19th, he told police he picked Thora up so he could deliver her to the hands of a white slave ring in San Francisco. Once he got to a place along the ocean south of Half Moon Bay, he gave Thora ether and she went off to sleep. And then he drove to a place on the other side of Half Moon Bay on number one. And at that point, he choked Thora, disrobed her, and left her body hidden near the road for the night. The next day, he moved her body to a field adjacent to the construction yard where he worked, and he put her in a drainage ditch and covered her with dirt and other stuff, like other construction stuff that he was using at his work, you know, wood and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the FBI did an extensive search with the aid of a bulldozer, and they couldn't find her body where he said he buried her. One point, he said that Thora was still alive and she was working as a prostitute.
No.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, he reverted back to his original story about how he shot her and then threw her over Devil's Slide. Thomas said that if the FBI did an examination of the rocks, they would find some blood or hair or some kind of evidence. And that is where Thora's body is. But like I said earlier, they still have not found her.
Well, if he threw her in the ocean down the rocks, you wouldn't. I mean, the animals would eat her. She'd be washed out to sea, whatever. But the fact that he changed his story so much is very schizophrenic. I don't know.
He was a player, I think. I don't know. I think he was trying to buy time.
But like, they're so vastly different. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, I think he was trying to see what he can get away with police officers, or maybe confuse everything so much that they just didn't know what was going on. And I don't know.
I guess that's a good point, because especially back then with no DNA, no nothing, no cameras. So you just keep talking, and then...
Back then, like we've said before, all they said was, you know, we have blood type B. That's all they know, right? Mm-hmm. Ina, unfortunately, was not too happy with Thomas, and so she decided that she was going to leave him, and so she requested the courts to annul their marriage. And she just said she was through with him, which, hell yeah, go girl.
Thank God.
1940s, that's big that she would do that.
But it's also like, I think everybody had tipped their hat to her and be like, right. Yeah, it's not like, you know, I'm not happy. It's he murdered a young girl died. And
I'm judging since they had a child together and requested an annulment that they were Catholic. So that's even a bigger deal in the Catholic faith.
You can only have an annulment. Catholics, isn't the annulment only with Catholics, right?
Yeah, but usually annulment is only if you're married less than a certain amount of time, like less than 6 months or,
That's what I thought.
Ina also said that she received a 4-page confession letter from Thomas. And in the letter, Thomas told Ina that he gave Thora a decent burial and said a prayer, baptized her with water, and buried her, although he never said in the letter where he buried her.
Honestly, to me, that is way worse than who do you think
there
you
were?
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, why would you do that? And then you think you're the almighty being that can do that? Mm. That makes me sick.
And I guarantee you there was no baptism and there was no prayer. I bet Ina was a religious woman and he said that to make him feel better. Because you know what else he did after he confessed? He asked Ina for money. He needed money for his defense lawyer. And go Ina, she said no. She's my kind of girl.
I would hope all people would say no. He just killed a teenager.
Yeah. So they go to trial, and Thomas entered a dual plea of not guilty and not guilty by reason of insanity. But we all know he's already considered not insane.
Is that a thing? Can they do that now? Can they? That's not a thing, right? Like, you can't do two today, today's world.
I'm assuming
right?
you can't. I don't have a law degree, nor have I played a lawyer on TV or anything.
Jennifer, you do. You have the Facebook law degree. You know you do.
Well, that's different.
You got that with Making a Murderer, the docu-series, whatever.
Oh, I haven't watched enough Netflix to know about that. I'll research it.
I think that was that had to be an earlier thing. Yeah, I don't think that's a thing now. I don't think you can do two.
You know what?
Or two.
For the podcast, I will, this weekend, I will watch nothing but Netflix, HBO documentaries, and everything I can just to find out if this is true or not. And I'll get back to you as soon as it's done, okay?
That'd be great.
I'm going to take one for the team. That's what I'm going to do.
Day one!
My husband's going to say.
You know what? You got to tell your family. Tell your family, hey, listen, this is, everybody is relying on me. I need to
Can't
do
you
this.
See I'm,
like,
it's, can't you see I'm getting...
Don't you want me to be a successful? I'm a winner.
Can't you see I'm trying to get my law degree? I'm watching Netflix to get my law degree. It's the only way I can do it. During the trial, the deputy district attorney, John McCarthy, said that by finding those socks, he believed the crime had been solved. What Thomas originally said, by pulling her over the cliffs, that's what happened. And he also said that I have never in my years with the district attorney's office encountered a case in which the facts were so horrible. So God love him. That was 1945. This, by today's standards, this is almost tame. That makes me so
sad. Ding dong. He just kept talking, thinking, I guess, like you said, that they're going to be confused. They're going to not know what to do. Also, with the plea of insanity or something like that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, maybe he thought ahead saying, hey, I'm going to just keep saying all this.
Right.
And either, yeah, they're going to think I'm crazy.
So Thomas, like all other psychopaths, does what? Takes the witness stand on his own behalf.
Of course he does.
And what does he do there?
The second thing he could do after that is be his own attorney.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, and you know what he did while he was there? He lied because he is a dirty, nasty little liar. And not only did he lie, he gave an entirely new version of what happened.
From the other seven five. He gave earlier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This time he said that he was driving in Campbell on November 2nd, when he lost his way and he pulled over to ask Thorud the directions to San Jose.
At a football game.
Seriously, actually said, Thorud, do you know the way to San Jose? Seriously, no.
At a football game. And hey, why don't you get in the car with me and you can drive me there, even though you're here with all your friends?
And then she willingly got in the car to show him which road to go on.
Of course.
Sorry. That screams bullshit. He said, quote, after she said that she didn't wish to stay on at the school as there were some sort of game or something going on there. Yeah, she was excited. She brought her freaking cowbell to school. Could you imagine having
to mention
could you imagine
in high school? You know that the football season is huge, right, with the kids because they all come and they're all going to know some game. Seriously, you know what's going on there.
She brought her cowbell.
Dumb.
Could you imagine taking your cowbell to class every time? That would be fun. I would
have loved
that.
Needs more cowbell. That's cute, though. I do
it's,
like it.
It's great. It's just innocent to me. That it just screams innocent. And Thor was innocent. He was, quote, driving fast at that time on a country road a mile and a half west from Campbell when Thora became frightened. And because she was scared, she jumped from the car and was injured. He then said he put her...
That's a new story,
this,
right?
This is the new story.
With the other...
Yeah, this is the new story.
Okay. He should become a writer, Jen.
He should.
Let's be honest. Like, that one has a mind full of creativity.
He's amazing. He then states that he put her back in the car and headed back towards town, which was Campbell, and got her to get her to the hospital. But after she was in the car for approximately 5 minutes, she passed away from her injuries. He then returned to the point where she had jumped out of the car and was injured and buried the body under some leaves alongside the road. So on cross-examination, he claimed his story was true, and he said his inconsistencies were intentional. His reasoning was that he deliberately wouldn't tell the truth because of the attitude of the district attorney and others in promoting the prosecution in Santa Cruz County.
Well, I, for one, darn those attitudes, because, I mean, you know, they're going to have a little attitude against a grown man that kills a young kid, mm-hmm. right? If he claimed that he buried her right there, why did they never find the body?
Well,
he's full of it.
With this new admission and the new location where he said Thora may be, the court requested that he showed them where she was. And he said, okay, yeah, I'll do it. Well, guess what? The next day when he was scheduled to go, he declined. And he said the reasoning why he didn't want to go is he was afraid for his safety.
With police officers?
After all, one of his fellow inmates at the county lockup said the trip would expose him to mob violence and render him as a risk.
Hey, buddy, who do you think that poor little girl was scared of?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
Like, look at her. You don't think the violence that you did to her?
Yeah. Oh, he's a little chicken shit. Whatever.
I like that you just said whatever, because that's usually what I say. So you're like, well, the whatever show, like Steve named us.
Well, here's the deal. We're Generation X, and our okay boomer is whatever. You know what I mean? That's just what
it
is.
The whatever with the rolled eyes.
Exactly.
Oh, whatever.
Whatever. Yeah. Since they didn't find another body, the jury went to recess. And it took the jury 38 minutes to find Thomas Henry McGonigal guilty. And he was sentenced to death. This case is actually kind of big because it became a huge precedent in court due to the mm-hmm. fact that there was a conviction without a body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Corpus delicti, yep. or the principle that a crime was committed, was argued in the Supreme Court and was successfully defended by the courts.
And that is harder than you think, but I'm sure people know that already. But it is a little bit harder than you think, because there's nothing tying you to that. And that person could be living, and that has happened before.
Right.
But not with a little teenager and a grown man.
But
no
I'm assuming the amount of blood they found was a vast amount that they would consider that she...
But you also have, like, her friends that said she got in the car.
Right.
She wanted a babysitter.
You had Mrs. Bodeau say that she was in the back of the car crawling to get out.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you have to say, you know what, maybe we don't have all the answers, but sometimes obvious answer is the answer. You know what I mean?
He did admit to killing her at first, and he admitted that she is dead. A lot of the times he admitted that it was an accident. She jumped out, mm-hmm. that she threw the body. I mean, he said she's dead, but they mm-hmm. just don't have a body. So anyway, it was a big deal. Anyway. So in efforts to prevent his impending execution, he later claimed that back in December, while being questioned by the FBI, that they had beaten him in their efforts to get him to confess.
Of course they did.
Mm-hmm. He's a liar, so I'm going to say...
No, what'd you call him earlier? What'd you call him? Dirty... What'd you say?
A dirty, nasty...
You called him it twice.
Yeah, a dirty little nasty liar. I'm going to say that was probably false. And another thing, if I can might add, I don't care if they did. They could have beat the shit out of him for all I care.
At that point, seriously?
Exactly.
Come on now.
He also apparently confessed to a second murder, but it was never corroborated. We have problems with that word, corroborated. But it was
never followed up with.
Yeah, it was never corroborated.
Who was it?
And again,
what's the deets on that one?
There is no deets that I know of. Oh. I think it was just another way to get his execution
attention
pushed back more. Yeah.
Like, I'm going to throw more details in there, and you guys are going to be like, wait, what? Wait, let's hold this. Let's
right.
see what happens.
Or well, it's like the inmates that are in the prison that mm-hmm. want to do the plea yep. deal. So I've got information on this. So if you stay this, mm-hmm. yeah. So it's all a lie, right? Yep.
I don't know. I guess when you're in that circumstance, you know, you're kind of like, I think of the little rats in a cage, and you're clawing to get out. And if you can climb on top of somebody to get out,
mm-hmm.
you're going to do it.
Right.
So they, you know.
It's how badly do you want to survive? So, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So his last meal wasn't anything super strange, basically. He requested fried chicken, and I've seen two things. One said he didn't eat very much of it. Other said he ate two meals. So who knows? He didn't.
Could you even be hungry at that time?
Mm-mm.
Seriously? I always think about that. I'd be like, yeah. Ice cream, maybe? Like something good? Marshmallow? Something that I don't know.
I just remember.
Like, you're not going to be hungry.
Timothy McVeigh of the Oklahoma City bombing, he wanted two pints mm-hmm. of mint chocolate chip ice cream for some reason, that just stuck in my head. So every time I see chocolate chip ice cream, I think of that horrible, horrible
Thanks for
day.
Ruining that for me.
Sorry.
I like that ice cream.
Sorry.
It's okay. It's what I'm going to think about now. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
He didn't sleep that well that night before, so not sorry about that. They said that he smoked cigars, and he joked with the guards that night.
He had cigars and...
Yeah.
Death row? Really?
I'm sure they were allowed to smoke in prison in the 40s. You were allowed to drink at work, yeah, so I don't know why you couldn't smoke in prison.
I know. I miss those days.
Yep.
Just kidding. Not really. I don't. Okay, go
Yeah,
ahead.
And he was permitted to make special requests, but he didn't really make any special requests. He did call Ina and ask that she and the daughter and her daughters be present at his execution, but I'm unsure if they actually came or not. He received Holy Communion from Father McAllister, which I guess he would have had to confess, you would think, to his murders. And
I don't know. I think at that time, it's like getting last rites. I think maybe it's just...
Yeah, possibly.
You get blessed. Yeah.
Because could you imagine how many Hail Marys you'd have to say for murder?
You're going to have to do 5,347,100 Hail Marys.
That's one way to get your execution pushed back. I can't do it until my sins are absolved. So at 9:10 a.m., he called the governor and he requested a last-minute reprieve, which was declined. On February 20th, 1948, at 10 a.m. in the gas chamber of San Quentin, 100 people watched as 33-year-old Thomas McGonigal was strapped to a chair. And just a reminder of what an ass he was, Thomas joked as the stethoscope was being strapped to his chest, "Oh, don't strap it too tight, you know. Fuck you."
Ugh.
Yeah. Anyway, so small white cyanide pellets were dropped in a tin bucket beneath his chair, and the fumes rose slowly up to the ceiling. Sheriff W.E. Hendricks said he threw his head back and gasped 3 times. Every time he gasped with what looked of pain and death about him, I smiled.
I'm right there with you, buddy.
Mm-hmm. He also said, quote, "He was the most notorious, despicable, blank that ever walked the face of the earth. I only wish it would have taken longer." Nice. Man right up my alley there. I like you, W.E. Hendrick. 11 minutes after the pellets were dropped, he was pronounced dead. And just after 11:30, his body was removed, and Ina said she wanted to start her life all over again for the benefit of their daughter. And Ina did later get married. But
good for her.
Let me tell you something else that's kind of interesting with this, that's kind of fitting to another story in the news. Before Thomas was executed, there was a man that was making the papers by the name of Dr. Robert E. Cornish. Now, Dr. Cornish was kind of a modern-day Dr. Frankenstein, or Frankenstein, if you
Frankenstein!
Watched Young Frankenstein. Anyway, Dr. Cornish believed that he could resuscitate a body after they were legally dead. He was known for his revivification experiments with dogs. He claimed that he could bring them back to life after being clinically dead, basically. But he wanted to try the same procedure with people. And this is really graphic. And Kimmy, our friend Kimmy, I'm so sorry. Any animal lovers, I'm sorry. You don't even have to listen to this part. You can just fast forward to 15. Well, I was going to say 15 seconds, but knowing Cam and I, it'll be another 30 minutes. But anyway, his experiments included what happened is he would suffocate the dogs until they were dead. And then he would place the bodies on a teeter board and rock them back and forth to get the blood flowing. And he would inject them with blood, adrenaline, and liver extract. Right? Right. Out of 5 or so dogs that he did this experiment with, only 2 actually survived, or actually 2 lived, but they were kind of never the same again.
Yeah, because that's a normal.
Kind of like zombie dogs, I would think. But really, come on. You think they were really dead? Because it takes a lot to suffocate. Maybe they passed out. I don't know. He's a doctor. He would know, but I don't know. But anyway, long story short, McGonigal volunteered to be in this experiment. He volunteered to, once he was dead from the gas, he wanted Dr. Cornish to bring him back to life, right? So Cornish petitioned the California Department of Corrections to allow him to revive Tom after he was killed in the gas chamber. But the Clinton...
Why would anybody okay that? Seriously.
Well, Clinton Duffy, the warden of San Quentin at the time, he denied the request. Now, the funny part is...
I have a lot better people that I would like to bring back to life. Elvis, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, come on now. Not some killer. Why would you even do that? Okay, go
Well,
I guess because you get to, I don't know, practice on their body. You know what I mean?
Well,
And you'd never do that to sweet Elvis. Just saying.
He said it would take 30 minutes to get all the fumes out of the gas chamber, and the body would have to lay there for at least an hour. So the body would be way past its prime time of reviving, I guess. But not only that, mm-hmm. and I just to see how naive everybody was at the time, they were afraid that if they did bring him back to life, he would have served his life sentence and that he couldn't be in jail anymore.
Oh.
And actually,
oh.
McGonagall's.
Hell no.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nope. I'd say bring him back to do it again.
Exactly.
And then kill him and then bring him back to do it again.
Well, but then you'd have to go, he'd be a man of lower, he'd be a zombie. So you couldn't really execute a man of lower IQ, right?
Not my problem.
I know.
Well, he wasn't at first.
So anyway, and that goes back to what's in the news today where the guy was actually clinically dead and he was brought back to life. And now he says that he served his life sentence. And
I know.
That's, you know.
Which is kind of clever. Let's be honest. That's kind of clever. But
that's smart as hell to think
beep,
of
beep.
That.
Try again. Yeah. Try again, buddy. Try again. You're cute, though. Nope.
So anyway, that is the disappearance of Thora and by the evil... Thomas McGonagall of 1935.
I know, I think that...
And like, they've never found Thor's body. Like, I can't stress enough, she's still listed as a missing person on the Charlie Project. And her poor parents never quite knew the true story of what happened to her. Isn't that sad? And didn't...
Well, and...
Lana...
Not to mention that he kept changing his mind all the time and telling new stories.
Oh, he didn't change.
Terrible.
There was no mind changing. He was just being a...
Changing his wording. Let's put it that
dirty,
way.
Dirty, nasty little liar.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway...
That is... Dirty, nasty. DNLL. Mm-hmm. He's a DNLL.
Yep.
We can put that on a t-shirt,
Jen.
Don't be a DNLL.
But anyway.
That can apply to lots of things.
But anyway, thanks to Lana. That was a very interesting story. I never knew that case before today. So
I love that you say that no matter what the story is.
Well, most of the times I don't
That's really interesting. I've never heard of that.
That was,
I know. It's part of your charm, Jen. It's part of your
But you know
charm.
What? That had two things that were or the whole... I'd never heard of Dr. Cornish and the revivification thing that I can't say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just... It was very interesting.
No, I love it.
And anyway.
It's good. It's very good. Thank you, Lana. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. No, it is good. I like...
Claps for Lana.
And it... Clapping, look at that. What are you doing? That sounds perverted.
I was clapping.
No, I like that the times have changed so much with that kind of case, right? Back then mm-hmm. versus now. Today, that would hardly make the news.
No.
You know what I mean? Mm-mm. Like a little girl getting abducted. I mean, maybe it would a little bit, but it happens way, way too frequently that we don't even pay attention to it like then. That was huge news back then,
I'm sure. Oh, yeah.
As it should be.
And but, what's also sad is they immediately thought that there'd be a ransom. Today, you would know that there'd be no ransom. You know what I'm saying?
I'm trying to think. Like, when was the last time a case went that there was a...
I'm not even sure if I know.
Right?
Yeah. The last case I remember is JonBenet Ramsey. And that's uncertain.
Ransom.
But that...
That was a big old fake ransom.
Exactly. But that's the last case I remember that had a ransom note, whether it was true or not.
Yeah, there's probably more, but they just not like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Anyway, nice job.
Yeah, thanks.
Like it.
Yeah.
Good job. So remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love you. Happy Turkey Day.
You clapping? You got the clap? Stella!
Stella! Ina Harriet. Boogie.
Touch yourself,
Buggy? Boogie?
Is that it?
B-U-G-H-I? Ina? E-N-A?
Baggy? I would say baggy.
B-U-G-H-I? Bogey.
B-U-G.
Maybe bogey?
Buggy?
How about he just married Ina?
Let's go with the first names on that one.
Ina. Doesn't that sound, isn't it Ina? E-N-A?
Mm-hmm.
Or Ina? Ina?
Yeah.
Bodo. What a great name. Instead of Bordeaux, it's Bodo. It's a great drag name, isn't it?
Yes.
Abada.
And here's my thinking of the screaming woman. My theory, and I hope I am correct, that the woman might have been drunk and her boyfriend pissed her off. So she got out of the car. They were fighting and he didn't want to leave her there. So he was pulling her back in and she was being overly dramatic and screaming like that. That's what I'm hoping.
I hope too, because if not, because
my daughter,
just the way that he was so calm and said, I'm sorry.
Right.
And she's a screaming bloody murder.
Because my youngest daughter will scream like that if she wants to throw a big fit to get a lot of attention, that's what she would do. And anyway, mm-mm. Cam, you had a great point with that. If you do get in a car and you are pulled into a car and you're screaming, help me, scream your name.
Mm-hmm.
Let them
totally.
Know.
They can't find who that is. That was the first thing I thought.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, you know, you always think of that later, but it is true. If that happens to somebody,
yeah.
scream your name.
Least, so
you know,
they'll know who to check up on. But I thought that was a great, great thinking thing.
I find it a little odd, though. It's been plenty of time that they should know who that is by now.
That's
like, that should have come
across
about
that's
somebody's
why I,
name.
That's why I think it might have been like a lover spat and the girl was totally at least
embarrassed.
Or just they were fighting and she was like screaming, yeah, help me, to get more attention.
I don't know, though. Like, would you? That was so. Well,
if I was 18.
Segway. Welcome to our life. No, I wouldn't. I'd be like, well, I shut down when I'm mad anyway. So it's like, I wouldn't scream like that. But that was different. I mean, that was like.
But if you're a total drama queen, if you're a total drama queen and you want attention, I see it with my daughter. I wouldn't put it past her.
But wouldn't you be like, start screaming like, hey, fucker, I am not going with you. You know what I mean? Things like that. Not
maybe
that was somebody that. No, I mean somebody like your boyfriend, like you're mad at him versus a stranger where you, I think you're in shock and you don't know.
I don't know.
You just start screaming. I'm sorry. Okay, go back.
Anyway,
go back to the story.
Anyway, that's what I'm hoping. Anyway, I'm hoping that that's what happened and that she's safe, mm-hmm, and it was just a total lover's quarrel. Anyway, okay. Blah. When Thor, I hate saying Thor because it sounds like I've got a lisp.
It's like Ethel Thayer. From Ongoing Pound. Ethel Thayer. Okay, go ahead.
Ethel Thayer
is from Ongoing Pound, and Henry Fonda said.
And the porn.
Remember? Do you remember that scene?
No. And the porn version of that is On Golden Blonde.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Do you know the way to San Jose, Thomas Earl? Yeah. That's wrong.
I don't know the words, but I'm singing with it,
okay,
in my head. No, I mean, I'm sitting in here thinking, God, I forgot I have that. That is super cute. Look at those shoes. Seriously,
okay.
You didn't even hear me a while ago. I pulled these shoes off and I was like, dang, I forgot I have these. I have blue suede shoes,
mm-hmm,
and then blue patent leather shoes.
Cute.
I forgot I even bought those.
Nice.
Okay, go ahead.
And then
Los Gatos?
Gatos, G-A-T-O-S, which I believe that's cats, right?
Yes.
The cat. Los Gatos?
I don't know.
Where's Dora the Explorer when you need her?
I took Spanish. I took it
so
once.
So did you take
twice,
Spanish?
And then
are you saying you took Spanish?
Three times. No, but I mean, I took the Spanish three times.
Yeah.
I kept switching schools till I could pass it.
Awesome.
Just saying.